And now most, I think, you know that my wife's father was nifter last Wednesday evening, and my wife still sitting in shiva. I'm going to share you some thoughts about him. I think of the crowd that's sitting in the room, most of you probably never even met him. It wasn't so well the last. He had a kibbutz coming here for Shavuos for the last year, not, but before that for about almost 20 years. Those who met him in the yeshiva would see a sweet gentleman who would say hello to you and ask you, could try and ask you questions about you if you would introduce yourself. Those who would come to us for a suda would hear somebody who would be asking a lot of questions and getting into a good fight and learning. But there's a lot more to him than that, and I think that I would put down three Memorei Chazal, which would, I think, help me understand them. So the first one is a Gemara in Shabbos, Chav Gimel Beis. And the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Derachim Rabbanon Havel Ubinin Rabbanon. A person who loves Tamei Chachamim is Echad to have children which are Tamei Chachamim. Rashi says, because he has Ava for Tamei Chachamim, so he's Echad to have a child. Just like he loves him, like a father loves a child, if he's zechut to have a child who's a Talmud Chacham. The gifts which we have in the Gemara is the Mokar Rabbanon, those who have respect and appreciate the Minhag Chachamim, Havelhu Chas Navosa Rabbanon, they have sons-in-law which are Minhag Chachamim. And the Dochim Rabbanon, that he has an awe of the Minhag Chachamim, who Gufei Lehevi Tzimmer Rabbanon. He himself becomes a Tzimmer Rabbanon, not a Talmud Chacham necessarily, but he becomes a Talmud, a Talmud of the Chachamim. It's not possible for him to do that. Who? He's there that when he says something, the weight which is given to it, the advice that he gives, the mentoring which he does, is appreciated as if he would be a Talmud Chacham. The going changes the Girsa. So we have Rachim Rabbanon has children which are Rabbanon. Moiker Rabbanon, he has sons in law which are Rabbanon. And he's Dochim Rabbanon, he becomes Rabbanon. The guy changes the gears and he says, Rachim Rabbanon has Benim which are Rabbanon. He's Dochim Rabbanon, then he has sons in law which are Rabbanon. And he's Moiker Rabbanon, so then he's he himself should become a Tzurman Rabbanon. Tzurman Rabbanon is used in Shas to mean a young Talmud Chacham. As opposed to a fully accomplished, developed Talmud Chacham, he's in the process of growing, but he has the mile of being a Talmud Chacham, of a person who's learning Torah. That's one Chazal. There's a Mishnah, Masechtas Kinim, last Mishnah, Masechtas Kinim, Seder Kachim. Shemen Rekashim, Ziknei Amayoritz, Kozman Shemaskinim, Daitan, Mitaref Azaleim. The Ziknei Amayoritz, the older they get, the more their das. Seemingly, the simple title means it gets confused. Shenemar, Meser Sofel, and Amonim, Matam Zakenim Yikach. So they settle, they become more settled. So simple touch means that they're zeichah to have a clarity with them all the way to the end. And Zitei Amoritz is not like that. So the drasha of Ran on this Gemara quotes this Gemara in one of the drashas, and he says that it can't be understood kipshutai, because Nebuch we see Tzimin Chachamim, which they have dementia, that their minds are not settled, and you find that more. It's, you know, the guy's 95 years old, and he still quotes you all the baseball statistics. Your mind's totally clear, you know, right, with his things. So what does it mean? So it means something else totally. He says people make decisions when they're younger, and those decisions have tremendous impact on where they're going to go in life and what they're going to do in life. And sometimes it's not clear that those are the right decisions. As a matter of fact, sometimes a person might even feel he made a mistake. But the Tamil Chachamim make the right decisions in the youth, even though in the youth they're not convinced that maybe it was the right path, it was a difficult path, and maybe they should have done something else. The older they get, the more that thought settles. Is it them or it's they make decisions when they're to not pursue a path of Torah mitzvahs, And they're very happy with it. It allows them to take advantage of this world, etc. But the older they get, the less happy they are. So their daitan, their decision, is mitarefes. It bangs on them. It starts, they wonder, why did I do this? That's the second mimer. And the third one is a renayana in Sharsheni. And so the renayana in Sharsheni says, goes through six things which cause a person to do tshuva. Okay, so there are hashishis. This is kasha yishma musar chacham hamachichim. A person hears musar yakshiv. He listens v'yishma, and he hears it v'yikana, and he humbles himself v'yaksu b'tshuva. He does tshuva. The kabbalibah called dibrei techachos, and he accepts the point. So you got a dover me dibrei, and he takes the things totally. Me'ayishat zeh b'rega katan. In one moment, Yotzi my fellow Lord Godel. He's changed his life. Because he's made a decision to accept the message. He's taking their direction. So he says, also be able to achieve a nebach lishachi, becomes a different person. He is given this reward as if he's done it already. He says, they're told to bring the go prepare for the Korban Pesach. They went, and where it says, Kamiyad also, they did on the 14th. Okay.
So my father was born in Baltimore, Maryland, in 1924. At the age of two, his parents were born, were European. They came to America with the hope to better their financial situation. They moved to Washington, D.C., and they opened a small grocery store in Washington, D.C. And a neighbor, which my father-in-law would describe, was that if you weren't willing to fight and get down a real with your fists, you didn't survive. So it wasn't for the nicest neighborhoods. And he says that he used to sometimes defend other Jewish boys, girls. But, he would get into the fights. The store was open on Shabbos. They'd make kiddush in the back of the store. They lived in the back of the store. The store was open on Shabbos. He had a bar mitzvah, he put on tefillin every single day. When he was enlisted in the Navy in 1943, he took a tefillin with him. And he put on tefillin until some point during the process, his tefillin, because of the sea air, etc., they turned green, and that was the end of his tefillin. But they weren't Shomer Shabbos. Came back from the Navy. He had no really way out to get out. The American government developed the GI Bill, and he was able to go to college. He met my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law was a Pella Pliatsuma. They were married for 65 years. East meets West. She was a partisan during the war from the Polish part of Lithuania. Person who smuggled fought in the partisans, traveled on top of trains, smuggled through the Alps, fascinating woman. Different worlds, they met and they got married. My mother-in-law lost all of her family in the war, except for one brother. And my son, Elazar, is named after Uncle Elazar. Uncle Elazar was a Talmid Chacham. And my Shmir's regard for him was bordered on awe. It was love, it was respect, and it was awe. And what Uncle Elazar said went. So when my oldest brother-in-law, it came time that he should go to school, Uncle Elazar said he should go to the Hebrew Academy. He went to the Hebrew Academy. All his friends told him that he's crazy. This is the end of the 50s. Public school was fine. There was no problem with public school. There's no cost of tuition, everything was free. Mishmir made a decision if you're going. He was a very erlich person. He's going to pay as much as he can in tuition. Mishmir lived in a house. The total square footage of the first floor was about 1/6 of this Beis Medrash. That's being probably being generous. And the bottom, when he bought it, the basement was an unfinished basement. He finished it himself because he said that he liked doing things himself. He couldn't afford to have any other way to upsize that. When he had to buy a car, so he had to take the kids' bank accounts that they got in presents and use that as collateral to borrow the money from the bank. He had no money. When my brother-in-law went there to learn, they needed a $70 deposit. He had to borrow money for the $70 deposit. That's the level of that limitations that they had. His friends, no problems with tuition. They saved money. They bought nice houses in Potomac. Like, that was the thing in those days. Get out of this neighborhood, buy houses, big houses in Potomac. Nice cars, new cars. My share drove the car was like, each car, all the family lore about the stories about the cars, you know, they're much more excited than the new ones, I have to tell you. There are a lot of good stories about them, how they broke down over here and did this over there, made this noise, you pulled this string, you know, etc., you know. So, that was the decision that he made, because that's what Uncle Osser said. My brother-in-law comes home in first grade, and he says to my father-in-law, says, why don't we keep Shabbos? They had a Shabbos party that week in school. You know, keep Shabbos. Why don't we keep Shabbos? So he said he thought about it. And he says, I didn't have a good answer. Why don't we keep Shabbos? So we're keeping Shabbos. So decision number one that he made was to send with all the difficulty involved, to send his children for Torah education. Decision number two, to take the Musar Shmuz out of a six-year-old. We need to keep Shabbos. He was reading that. He was reading, those of you might have ever heard of Hermann Wolf's book, This Is My God, Orthodox Jew, wrote a book about to explain Yiddishkeit to the American public. He used to live in, actually used to live in D.C. My father knew him. And it made a profound impact on him, and he decided they're keeping Shabbos. Moved into a neighborhood. They moved out of the neighborhood. They were in the D.C. They moved into a neighborhood. There was a Rav, Rabbi Bogner, all those of them. Those of you know, Nussi Gross, Zemmer Orchestra, his grandfather, his mother's father, Rabbi Bogner, all those of them. If you walk into Ezes Israel, the name of the show was Ezes Israel. If you ever go to Ezes Israel in Rockville, ever hear of it? Rabbi Kreiser Shul. You see a big plaque for Rabbi Bogner. That's, you go to Young Israel, Ezes Israel, Potomac, you'll see a big plaque for Rabbi Bogner. Rabbi Bogner was his Rav. Rabbi Bogner had a tremendous influence on him. Brother was a fascinating person. He had a PhD in psychology. He opened up the first Orthodox halfway house in the country. He studied psychology under Freud in Vienna. He was together with the Lubavitcher Rebbe in the Sorbonne for a period of time in Paris. He was from Vienna originally, and he had smicha from some very, very chashuvim chachamim. And he was a brilliant person, and my shmir, who was quite brilliant himself, would love to talk to him. There was a person in the neighborhood, somebody we know, Joey Orlo. His father, Ted, my father-in-law, were best friends. Best friends means that they would argue, debate, discuss, philosophize, halacha, hashkafa, hours and hours and hours upon every whenever they met. And that's what they did. Right. One of my shared best friends at work was a son of a minister. And they would sit there and they would discuss and they would philosophize at work, the two of them together, you know, when they had free time. My shared was not a big fan of mingling with non-Jews, even in the early years. They had influences on you, but this person was a very Ehrlich person. He was impressed with him, and he had a relationship with him. So years go on, and you know, he still has never learned Gemara in his life. He never opened the Gemara. But, his father passes away right before the remitzvah of his second son. So he comes to shul every day to say Kaddish. Didn't offer the Amid. He wasn't really so proficient in reading Hebrew. But he said Kaddish. He asked Rabbi Bogner one time, towards the end of the year, so when do I have to stop coming? When can I stop coming to shul? So Rabbi Bogner says to him, you know, Mr. Rosen, it would be a tremendous schus to your father's neshama if you continue to come even after the 11 months are up. So that was it. He started coming every day. coming every day, momentum, and he eventually moved out of Silver Spring, and he was in Baltimore, he was still working in downtown Washington, in Virginia, Northern Virginia. He would get up at 3:30 to 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure he did not miss Minyan. He would drive her for Minyan, because you cannot miss Minyan. For over 40 years, he didn't miss Minyan, because the Rav said you have to come to Minyan. So one time, the Rav said one thing, one time, and that changed his life again. He once told Rav Bogner, I was there when he said it, he said, Rav Bogner, you created a monster. I can't miss Minyan. I can't miss. And being in the Minyan meant being on time. And being in the Minyan also meant that if there was difficulty with the Minyan, he would make the phone calls the night before to make sure there was a Minyan. Because you can't, you have to have a Minyan. It was a responsibility. The shul slowly dies out as the neighbor dissipates, and he starts davening in Woodside on Shabbos. So Woodside was a 45-minute walk. So part of the walk back every Shabbos, the walk back meant that they would chazer over Rabbi Breidowitz's drasha. He and his wife together, they would review it together. Each one reminded them what, you know, what the different points. Those of you ever heard of Rabbi drasha, he spoke about an average of 20-25 minutes, and he said about 40 million things during those 25 minutes. He threw the whole Kolter Kol at you, and then you would try and remember it on the way home. When the grandchildren would come, he would do it with the grandchildren. On the way back, you know, and he's very proud that they remembered more of it, they could, in a more clear order than he did sometimes. I have some very smart nieces and nephews. One of the members of the shul there one day says, you know, says to my father-in-law, he's now at the age of 60. My father was 95 when he passed away. He's now at the age of 60. He says, why don't you come to Rabbi Breidowitz's Gemara shul? Somebody invited him to the shiur. He says, oh, he's going to go. He never learned Gemara before in his life. He couldn't really read Aramaic. He couldn't really read Hebrew so well. The Rabbi Breidowitz was saying in the shiur, it wasn't a daf yom, it was an eon shiur. And he was, the questions going back and forth, etc. So here's a person who's a brilliant person, who's sitting in the shiur, he does not follow one word. And my father was the type of person who every time he went through a shiur, unless it was something which was, he was out of his element, he would ask, he would challenge, he wanted to understand, he wanted to know. He said this, I said, Elliot, sit there without saying a word. I don't know what he's talking about. He would go each week and he would write to take the back of checkbooks, the deposit slips, the back of the cancel checks, and he would write down the words that he heard in English, transliterated. And then we had a chavrusa shaft on the phone. And he would ask me what the words mean. Asking what the words mean means he needed to know exactly the exact translation of the word. That was number one. Because this way, when it comes up somewhere else in Shas, use it in a little bit different context, he'll know exactly what the word means. Then he wanted to know how it was used in the context of the Gemara they were learning. So it's something that's a little bit different. There's a nuance there, the denotation and the connotation. It would then mean sometimes, okay, now what's the general point that the Gemara is talking about? And then how Rabbi Breidowitz was, why Rabbi Breidowitz was talking about it. So every question, and we went through this list every week. From the list, I could tell you that he had no idea what the shiur was talking about at the beginning for sure. And he persevered going to the shiur. Because he made a decision to go, he's going to go. He made his first siyum on the Masechta of Gemara, he was already over 70 years old. He had 8 siyum before he was nifter. And he came in person talking how to learn. Gemara saying how to learn. Because when he would learn a Gemara, now I have to take a backtrack. Once I joined the family, so I had a little bit of background on halacha. So he wanted to understand halacha. The attitude of the family was, thank you for teaching me a new halacha. And one time my son, who was at the age of, I think, 3 or 4, saw my mother-in-law doing something, says, Bubba, you know how to do that on Shabbos. I said, oh, thank you for telling me that. And she stopped doing it. Because thank you for teaching me halacha. I was from a 4-year-old kid, Master Toys. Now, granted, he wasn't upset right on the psak. But my wife told me after the story, I said, you know, there are some nuances that he missed, but you can be more like a 4-year-old. But the basic concept, he was right. He saw how we did it at home. And he was told one time he can't do that, so he understands he can't do that. He kept at it. But and we would come for Yom Tov, we would come for Shabbos. You know, my family wasn't from, so I came to them every Pesach, the first year not, we actually made Pesach in Cleveland. But after that, for years, we went to them for Pesach and Sukkot in the summer. I would walk in, the phone calls, and say, I was thinking about a question. What's the luck over here? Why is it like that? Why not like this? Why can't this be true? And he would ask me the questions again and again and again. He wasn't stupid. He was thinking about it again and again. So he would hear a thought and he would think about it. And he would chew it over slowly again and again and again. And that's what he did with the Gemara. The question was in the Gemara. He says, Daddy, we already had this word before, but I want to know exactly how it's being used over here. And this went on for years till he became a person who was Zechat Habdin Rabbanon and Chasin Rabbanon and Eel Lahavi, Summer Rabbanon. I wouldn't call him a Rabbanon, but Summer Rabbanon he was. And he definitely was Nishroi Milik and Summer Rabbanon. People used to come to him for Aitzes. A lot of people would discuss life issues with him. He had a tremendous amount of experience, been through a lot in his life. And that was he was Zechat to that. Some life lessons that I learned from him. We got married, and you have to understand that I came, whippersnapper, young tamachachem, thought I knew everything, this balbus, I have to teach him what's right and what's wrong, etc. And then the first few times, there definitely were some interfaces which were a little less than gentle, shall we say. So after one of those experiences, he says he was in the Navy. He was in the Navy. He was in the South Pacific during the war. There's something in the Navy called a shakedown cruise. Shakedown cruise is after you build a ship. You have to picture that building a ship. Some of these ships, there are millions of parts in the ship. A large ship. How many nuts are there? How many bolts? How many washers? How many pieces of metal? How many of this? Start thinking about what there is that could be wrong in the ship. So they take it out for a cruise before they take it out, for real usage, to see if they can find the kinks. It's called a shakedown cruise. He says, Ellie, this is a shakedown cruise. This is not how our relationship is going to be. We're getting used to each other. It's okay. Don't get nervous at that. We started off on the wrong foot. It's not going to. It'll settle down. And we had a wonderful relationship. But that was like, he wasn't insulted by the fact that we had this difficulty and I wasn't giving him the proper cover, maybe, and that was it. The tenor of the relationship is set. We'll work it through. Don't get nervous. We're married the second year. We made Pesach, so he calls me up about four weeks before Yom Tov. And he says to me that, I know you have certain chumras, which we don't necessarily keep for Pesach. I will honor every single chumra that you want. Tell me whatever chumras you want, we will do. Regards to the type of heksherim which are used for the items, how to kasha the oven, whatever you want, we will do. But you have to tell me now, or next few days. He says, because it's not fair to mommy that she should prepare all the food, and we'll sit down to the Seder, and you say you don't eat that because you're machmer. So they have to be sensitive to her feelings. My mother-in-law, Lashon Shalom, her hanoah in life was feeding people. That was like, that was. She didn't enjoy eating. She enjoyed watching you eat. Like, that was the hanoah. She would serve, But my mother-in-law, you said the chicken was a side dish. And the two of them, they ate small. But whenever they had the kids over, they had guests, chicken was a side dish. There was usually three types of meat on the table. And about six or seven different side dishes. It was crazy. So when I first got married, she would serve. I would eat. She'd come out. After you finished serving, you're not eating anything. I already had this gigantic meal already. I can't eat anymore. So I thought that her simplest yomtiv and her only Shabbos was watching me eat. So I would wait till she came out. Baruch Hashem, you're enjoying the food. So I ate. I had to wait a little bit, but I ate and she enjoyed the fact that I'm eating and everybody was very happy. But you can't do that to her. And there's all these little life lessons along the way, different things. He had a tremendous work ethic. He retired from the government at the age of 71 or 72, by the time, if you don't retire then, it ends up working against you financially. There's an incentive to retire. So his retirement was like a very long retirement. He stopped working in the government on Friday. He started his new job on Monday. That was his retirement. Shabbos and Sunday. He was a patent lawyer. He was a patent examiner for the government. He had a degree in law. He was a patent lawyer, and he finished his last case. He was 91 years old. He stopped working. He said that he doesn't feel he has the strength to give the client the effort that they really deserve for the money they're paying. Right? Therefore, I'm not going to work anymore. He wanted to work further, but it's not fair to the client. They are the guys. He was a happy person. He had a sense of humor. Those of you who knew him, you know, he always had a joke. He loved getting to know people. But getting to know people meant get to know you. The same way he learned Gemara, he got to know you. He would sit and talk to you about you. Some people didn't enjoy that necessarily because sometimes they didn't want to talk about themselves really in their kishkas. So he would ask you questions in your kishkas. So why did you make that decision? Why did you do this way? Don't you think the wood might have been better? It's a possibility. Did you contemplate that? Why not? What's motivating you? You know, he would do that to people. So some people enjoy that very much because it really enlightened them. Some people would run like, you know, my wife said that a lot of her friends used to leave him in tears because they would get a little bit too intense sometimes. But he would do the same thing with 5-year-olds. He would get down on their level and talk to them. He could connect to them. The adults, she was willing to adults, and he would get to know every one of the kids. Because he wanted to get to know you. He wanted to know you. See, when he wanted to know the Gemara, he wanted to know you. He loved teaching. He loved explaining. He was in the hospital a few weeks ago. The nurses came in to check to see how his mind is doing. He says, you know, we want to ask you some questions. He says, whatever topic you want to ask, It's okay. They want to know, like, you know, what day it is, you know. So he's saying, do you want to talk about something in history, something in philosophy, you know. And he started explaining them. He says, you know, it's a question I'm just thinking about, this famous question, whether Lincoln really freed the slaves. If you read the Emancipation Proclamation, it doesn't really say that he freed the slaves. He says that the South should free the slaves, you know. And he started giving a whole 10-minute discourse about whether they freed the slaves or not. And the nurses were, like, loving this. It's fascinating. But Mr. Rosen, what year is it? So he was close. He said 1920. It was 1920, close enough, right? So he didn't do so well in that part of the test. It was a person who was growing every day of his life. Now, he was offered a medal from the government for his whatever bravery, whatever he had during the different battles. And he thought about it for a long time. He says, "I'm not taking the medal." He says, those years, I was rough and tumble with other guys. I'm not proud of those years. I didn't think that really. I don't want to in any way look at those years as the years that are special. The years that are special, the years that I'm zeicha to learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, being with the family. His old friends, and he used to get with his old. Last few years, he didn't get with his old friends because most of them were no longer here. But then, I mean, he was in his 80s. They used to get together with some of the old chaver that he knew from way back when. There was one topic which was off the table, was not discussed, and that was grandchildren. So he was like to 4 children, 30-plus grandchildren, 80-plus great-grandchildren. He was like to great-grandchild. And most of these people had 2-3 grandchildren, and most of those were not Jewish, from their houses in Potomac and their beautiful car. Yeah, when he would daven, once he stopped working, or when he was working as a lawyer, he was working at counsel, which means he didn't have hours. He worked in whatever hours he wanted to do. So he would, after daven, he would sit. One time I asked him, Daddy, why are you sitting after daven? What are you thinking about? He says, I'm thinking about all the brachas, the Kodesh Baruch Hu bestowed upon me in my life. So before I leave the shul every day, I want to think about that before I walk out. And he was very proud of what he was able to do. And he said a beautiful line. Wednesday morning, excuse me if I'm going to get a little bit teary over here. He knew he was going to be nifter that day. He knew. We didn't believe him, but he was right as usual. That morning, my brother-in-law went into him. He said, you know, that asked him to say Vidi with him. He was still, his mind was still clear. He said, "Say Vidi with me, I'm done." So he told the owner of the nursing home that today's the last day they'll be together. And he said to my brother-in-law, he says, you know, I'm not ashamed of what I've taken with me. But there was that years he was ashamed of. The years that he fought, etc. He says, well, he made the tshuva. He changed his life. He didn't let that define who he was, because that's his earlier years. So that decision to change, because the Rav said, changed his life. Because his son said, because a friend said, he let those things be pointers to make a direction in life. And now he can look back and say, you know, maybe there are times along the way where you wonder, like, you know, wow, this is the money was tight. It was very tight. And he was involved in, he was on the board of the Hebrew Academy, he was on the board of the yeshiva. My Uncle Lazar's daughter was the first was in the first class of the yeshiva. They started with a girls' class. Her brother-in-law was the first boys' class, which was the following year. Mm-hmm. They were part of the founding part of the yeshiva. And he worked hard. There was one point where when he was becoming a lawyer, he was working as a pharmacist by day. He had a degree. He was a certified pharmacist. He had a degree in pharmaceuticals. And he was going to law school at night. He was involved in these things. And there's no money. With all that work, there was no money. And these guys, his friends are living it up. But he who laughs last, like the Mishnah, when they're younger, maybe you're not sure which path was the right path. If you look back at the age of 80, if you look back at the age of 90, and you say, Zichner Moritz, the Dr. Mitrevis Aleim, what did I do? I sent my kids to public school, and look what I got. I got going for 8 o'clock. He gets happier and happier and more settled and more settled with that decisions that he made, the direction that his life went. For just moments, these ability to allow moments to define him and not be stuck and to be in growth, a growth mode. The 60-year-old Gemara story just is a mind-boggling thing to me, that a person of his caliber of learning and his intelligence, and the fact that he loved discussing things, and we had to sit there mute because he didn't follow what was going on, and he would do this week after week and feel foolish and feel like inadequate at the age of 60. What do I need this for? I'm going to master this. At the age of 60, he started learning Gemara. And remember, he was learning Yavamas, he was trying to understand the concept of Zika. So he discussed it with my brother-in-law, my other brother-in-law, discussed it with me, discussed it with all of the grandchildren who are holding the caliber, which are already the older yeshivas. Didn't like the side, doesn't fit. Finally, he discussed it with my son, Lazar. He says, Ellie, he told me up, Lazar gave me a Taichin Zika, which I understand. He asked the question about 25 times. But he's holding the dragon to understand what Zika is. Rabbi Sai, what is Zika? He's a Tzimmer Rabbana. I wouldn't call it Talmud Chacham, but Tzimmer Rabbana. He's a Chedui, a person who's handling Zika. Right? At the age of 85. It's a mind-boggling life story. And he was Zoycha. I was there at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He was still... His mind was, you know, was... He said one phrase, which he was putting together two stories in his life and stuck me into one of his stories. That wasn't direct. He recognized me by my first name, last name, introduced me to his aide. Derek Eretz, he introduced somebody. Told me that I love you. I told him I love him too. Then he says, I'm not talking anymore. And that was it. Those were the last words that he said. He decided it's time to go. Since he'd come to Kodesh Baruch Hu with a lifetime that he was proud of. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And it was time to move on. So he made a decision, and he acted upon it. He used it for both.